This week on The Droids, we talk about The Mandalorian Season 2 coming in October, as well as potential spin-offs from The Mandalorian. Star Wars Galactic Cruiser is almost ready to set sail in outer space. You can go and make your own trip. Plus, Sam and I are breaking down midichlorians. All that and so much more this week on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Sam, I am Mike, and Sam, here we are again. The buttoned up boys, focused. We've got a quick, tight pod. We're getting through all the information, having a great conversation. I love it when we get to focus on what's important and not all these hot and freshes, not all these random interruptions. This is a solid podcast we're about to have.
Yes, good morning, Mike. Thank you.
Remember, we got to get our ties all straightened, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was busy putting in my cufflinks.
Speaking of ties and Natalie dressed individuals as such as ourselves, I was watching the season finale of The Mandalorian again, and all I thought was, you know, Giancarlo Esposito looks great in his Grand Moff Gideon outfit and his costume, but it's just something missing when that guy can't straighten his tie.
That's a great point. Tie straightening has been a big part of my life, in terms of, cinema and television that I enjoy. Of course I love, you know, Gus's big last moment, still going out in style. When you started that, you actually threw me with that transition, Mike, because I assumed naturally.
Why? Yes, of course.
That, you know, so I was watching a season finale myself this past weekend of the Professional Football League season finale.
Didn't have a cliffhanger, did it?
There was no cliffhanger. It seems like it was I'd be okay if it were a series finale. but we got the Mike. There's all kinds of new trailers, all kinds of new stuff. Ooh, yeah. But you know which one I'm talking about.
Let's see, Fast 9?
Michael.
No, it's not F9. That's literally the other trailer I can remember from the Super Bowl, other than
I'm obviously, man, No Time to Die. We're like 2 months away.
I know.
Two months away from a new Bond movie. I kind of can't believe it. It's like it's almost here.
That was pretty shocking to see April. You know, just knowing that I feel like the next month and a half is going to fly. February is a short month, and then we're into March. It is really surprising to think we're going to have a new Bond that quickly.
It is remarkable. And I think, you know, particularly because all the, I promise we'll, I don't know. I hope there's like one person out there. The whole theory that like every episode is someone's first episode. Like, I hope they're like, what? This is a Star Wars thing?
Hey, I talked about The Mandalorian first, so we're all right.
Go back and listen to our back catalog. You'll understand. This is where I'm at. I think there's something about like the production issues they had. They had a director. They lost a director with the Danny Boyle script. They kind of went back to scripting and everything. But like the whole thing, like Cary Fukunaga stepped in like and started shooting this like less than 18 months ago. You know what I mean? Like it was
Ooh,
like
no, that's not a good number to have, because a certain person named J.J. Abrams.
Oh no,
18 months to make The Rise of Skywalker.
Well, so I have this is the first time that I've had any concern from a trailer, and it's only because they kick off that teaser with like that like drone plane thing going, that like vehicle, and I mean, it's a big CGI shot of, you know, stealthily bringing, you know, two spies into an area out of like a cargo plane. And it's like, first of all, Fallout just did it so good. And second of all, I got some serious Die Another Day vibes from like the thick CGI painted all over that of like a Transformer plane falling out of the back of a jet. So I was kind of like, that looks lame. But
Sam, I thought you were going to make a quick joke about how deep you're going to go into the Bond trailer, but now we're into the full breakdown. Okay, all right. I guess, you know, for that first time listener, this is a Star Wars podcast. I promise we'll talk about Star Wars at some point.
But anyway, I don't know if he straightens his tie in it or not yet. We'll find out in April.
Which, does he straighten in every one? I knew he did right before the end of Casino Royale, right?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that it's, I mean, it's a,
feels like he,
you know,
would.
There's usually a tie straightening moment, a tie removal moment.
Oh, pulling the cuffs out of his sleeve moment.
The cuffs has been kind of Daniel Craig's thing. I don't know.
You think that we'll get,
we're really close though.
Could we get a Star Wars genre film that has a Bond-esque character?
So here's the thing. I don't know about I don't know how that would work. First of all, I'd say, like, yes, you could. You know, anything could work in this galaxy. And the whole idea, I mean, Star Wars itself, like, especially the sort of period during the original trilogy, you know, that's, it's very World War II analogous, right? All, you know, yeah. All of it is kind of allies and Nazis, you know? And so, you know, that's what Bond came out of. That's the world Bond came out of. Obviously, we put him squarely mid-century in the 60s and stuff because that's when the movie started. But I mean, there's totally room for double agents and stuff. And I think the closest we're going to get, I mean, it's interesting that, like, Tony Gilroy is going to be doing the the What's His Name series,
the Diego Luna, Cassian Andor.
Thank you,
spy series,
Diego
yeah.
Luna's, because that to me is like ripe for this. Now I don't think he's going to be Bond, but yeah. Like Tony Gilroy did, you know, Bourne, and he just had that movie Beirut. Like, I think there's going to be some strong espionage sort of spy thriller vibes to that show. And I'm very excited for that element of it. I could do without the Gilroy factor, but like, I don't want to listen to that man ever talk about anything I like ever again because he's a monster. But like, you know, other than his involvement, I'm excited about the direction I think they're going to take that series.
Well, Sam, I actually think that we've already seen the Star Wars version of James Bond, and he's on a certain planet, a planet that has a casino. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Good old Canto Bite, and it's Mr. Justin Trudeau. He is Star Wars Bond. He's Star Wars Bond.
Thoreau, not Trudeau.
Oh, yeah, there you go. He's the Canadian Prime Minister who's actually in Star Wars.
Ryan right now is he's spinning in his grave.
They're both handsome gentlemen. What do you want me to say?
They honestly put those two together in a movie.
Anyway, for Justin Theroux, he actually feels like his character is that, and then we could have him romancing Maz Kanata. It seems very Bond-like, right?
Sign me up.
All right, as we're talking about potential other iterations of Star Wars, other characters, other genres, it brings us to one of the main pieces of news for this week, and of course, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, droidspod@gmail.com, and check out the YouTube playthrough that Ryan did of Fallen Order, and send us all those emails. We want to hear from you. We want to hear about your Bond thoughts. If you're the one person who's right in line with Sam, let us know. Send us your messages on droidspod@gmail.com. So, Sam, there was the news that obviously we knew Mandalorian Season 2 was coming in 2020. It's been confirmed by Bob Iger in an earnings call that we would get Season 2 in October, which really, we're in February. We're not far away. I'm really excited to see where it goes next, having just recently watched the finale for a second time. Giancarlo Esposito, not only because he's got that Gus Fring vibe, even without the tie, I can't wait to see more of what happens with that character, the dark saber, what direction they take this of the Mandalorian taking Yoda back to the planet of Yoda's, baby Yoda, back to the planet of Yoda's, and seeing how that story plays out. But what may have been the more interesting note is that it seems like there's now a much bigger commitment to this being Star Wars television for the next, and streaming TV for the next few years. There was no mention whatsoever of any films, but Bob Iger did mention that they might consider spin-off series for The Mandalorian, for characters from The Mandalorian that we've already seen. Really interesting when you've got Cassian Andor and Obi-Wan on the horizon, that they would think about doing a Mandalorian spin-off, and we can talk about that in just a moment, but I think it kind of flew under the radar that it sounds like even though they mentioned that there would be a January announcement about when the next movie would be or what it would be, it seems like they're now brushing past that, just plowing through and saying, we're not going to talk to you about a film for a year or two, which I'm not too heartbroken about that. But I guess when you hear that there's not going to be a Star Wars film, even news about a Star Wars film, meaning we're probably not even looking at 2022 as a release date. It might even be beyond that. I just think that's even longer than I was expecting to wait.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's, I don't know when they're going to make the announcement. We're still anticipating something at the end of the month around sort of defining what Project Luminous is. Regarding the TV series, I mean, it totally makes sense. I think it's something we kind of speculated would happen. I think Chris, especially, if not on air, definitely in our, text threads, has been really, really bullish on Disney Plus and like more streaming, streaming shows and Star Wars moving to TV in a big way. And it's like, you have to, if you think about it from Iger's perspective, I mean, it's such a win. They got a huge number of signups, a huge influx of cash, and The Mandalorian and Baby Yoda specifically were like universally praised and like went viral.
It was definitely shocked.
The most positive thing, like positive experience Star Wars fans had across the board, and like Star Wars fans pretty much agree on it.
Which is an impossible task.
So when you think about the investment, this is an earnings call. He's talking to his shareholders and stakeholders and the board and everybody, and he's reporting on this. He's going to say, like, look, the thing that we have, spent the last several years preparing to launch and launching and investing in, a huge investment in infrastructure and, a completely new platform that we released. Like, this is his opportunity to say it was hugely worth it. It was hugely successful. And we are going to, ring it for all it's worth over the next couple of years. So it makes total sense that his focus would be there, especially when you look at, The Rise of Skywalker is like the weakest performing of the sequel trilogy. Yeah. And by a significant enough margin that it's like, you can't help but think that Iger and Disney and the shareholders have to be rethinking, like, well, where did it go wrong? What did we do wrong with this? Obviously, I don't think they're going to abandon features entirely, but to sort of backburner them, these are business decisions, not artistic decisions.
Well, and we've talked about that, but that's still something that surprises me, because even though the third one underperformed, I feel like they could get a writer who could say, okay, and director, give me 3 years, I'll get you a good movie. And most likely they could.
I
want to see them go
that.
Back to James Mangold, to be honest with you. I would love to see, not necessarily the Boba Fett film from James Mangold, but him direct a Star Wars movie. I would be thrilled about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he'd be great. I don't know that he'd do it right now, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you consider the fact that he was attached and announced for a Boba Fett movie,
yep,
which got like sidelined and kind of axed in favor of then Favreau gets to do a Mandalorian TV series. If I'm Mangold, I'm like screw you guys, I'm taking my ball and going home.
Announced? I think is the question that I have, because I think it was all like the Hollywood Reporter said, yes, it's happening. There was no Lucasfilm stepping
out. Oh, I don't
out.
Think Disney ever, yeah, I know, I think you're right.
Yeah, which I think is intriguing in its own, because, some of these, even right now, there was concern that Obi-Wan, which has been announced and had Ewan McGregor on stage, could have been canceled, but it's just delayed or being rewritten. But to go back to what was brought up by Iger,
they haven't delayed the at present they haven't delayed the release of the show yet, right? Like, it's
technically
still,
not because
still
we
saying
didn't,
it's 2021.
We
they
didn't
left
know
themselves
official
a wide
date
berth.
Or anything. Yeah,
yeah.
But I want to go back to what Iger was saying. Can you think of a character from The Mandalorian that you would want a spinoff on? I mean, it's maybe Cara Dune. I don't think anybody wants the Greef Karga spinoff. Let's just be honest, because I'll get my hackles out and you will see that I am alive too.
I got one word for you, Mike. Cannavale.
I knew it.
I can't even remember the character's name.
I know. I don't remember the character's name.
I was trying to think of it.
You know what? And sadly, I don't remember the character's name that Ming-Na played. And that... Oh, wait. Was it Fennec? That was Fennec. Fennec Shand.
It was Fennec. Yeah, Fennec Shand.
We got so little of her. That's the one character other than Cara Dune. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's a spinoff. But I don't really know anything about her to get me excited if they were to announce that as a spinoff. I'm surprised that you would even say they would even say that because... There's just not a character.
I get it. I know what's happening
here. Is it the Quill spinoff?
No, I know what's happening. Favreau's looking to do... He wants to just do a series with Bill Burr.
No.
It's going to be the... I don't know. That ragtag group of jerks in space.
We have a snow planet. We have a sand planet. We have a Boston planet. And it's just going to be all Boston people.
No, I think Cara Dune's the obvious one. I truly would be interested in a Cara Dune series.
As much as I was completely against Gina Carano to begin with this, being that I just didn't think she was a good actress, she pulled it off. She did a great job. I would love to see more of her.
Like bringing her in, and I mean it's potentially interesting, the idea. I mean, I think I want Cara Dune and Greef Karga to continue on in the Mandalorian story. I think I want that core threesome/foursome, if you count Baby Yoda, you know, to be the center of, you know, the protagonistic center of our show.
Yeah.
I mean, they could ostensibly split those off into two series, and there could be the Greef and Kara series where she's kind of bounty hunting for him, and the Mandalorian becomes a separate thing altogether. I kind of doubt they'd do that.
It does feel like the Mandalorian is about to go. They did set it up as he was going on a solo mission with Baby Yoda.
It's not
hard to bring them back together, obviously.
Look, Cara Dune also represents, you know, she's really popular, you know, from the series. Gina Carano, I think, is someone the fans really responded to and like. I think she's charismatic and down to, like, do more in this world. I think, you know, she would jump at the chance to have her own series. And I think, like, you know, Star Wars needs, like, a show about and with more women.
Oh, wait, are you trying to say that Star Wars fans are going to be totally on board with that and have no complaints whatsoever? You're talking about that there's not going to be a faction of the Star Wars fan base that is going to be terrible with another female lead?
I think when it's coded, when it's I think the way she's coded is, like, you know, a quote, you know, badass. You know, tough woman. She's a strong woman in both senses, like both the sense of, like, she's an interesting character with, like, a compelling inner life, but also she's, like, physically strong and tough, which is how a lot of, like, male fans look to see, like, strength in their female characters. So I think she covers that base. Also, she was introduced in a show about a man that stars a bunch of men, that was directed by a bunch of men, largely.
I say this sincerely.
Except for the best episodes.
I say this sincerely that I feel like there could be some ancillary merchandise that says, like, a galaxy far, far away is female. Like, I think that would be a good approach for them to take with it. Is, you know, because you said, like, oh, she's a strong woman, and you just think of some of the language out there right now. I'd love to see it be, like, wholly embracing what part of this fan base can't even accept.
Dude, it's the galaxy far, far away is female. Let's get those up. Let's get some.
Let's do it.
All right. In next episode, we'll give you the link on our T Public.
Yes.
We'll also
have a iPorg TLJ shirt. It's in the works as well.
But I think also, you know, the announcement of, oh, there could be spinoffs of these characters, that also feels like a very calculated statement. It's non-committal. It provides no timeline. Yeah. And it's something that, like, shareholders and stakeholders who, again, just saw a bunch of, you know, Disney investment in Disney Plus. They just saw really mixed and confusing reporting on The Rise of Skywalker. It didn't do as well. It's, you know, all this stuff. Well, you've got this hit that everybody seems to love. Oh, yeah, we might spin off, like, a few more characters, you know, Buffy style. We might have a whole franchise around it. And it's like, yeah, they're going to love that. Of course, that's what you want to tell the people who are looking to make money off it, you know?
Yeah. So, Sam, let's transition the conversation. One thing we have not talked about Star Wars Underworld. There is a clip that's been out. I want to save this conversation for when Chris and Ryan are on the pod. It is this spec show when they were still trying to think about making a TV series with Lucasfilm. And I think we should jump into that a little bit when we got the whole crew together, because I don't know if you've watched that full spec.
I've watched all of it.
But let's save that for the full gambit of everyone back together before we continue on this conversation about the midichlorians.
Yes, but spoiler, I loved it.
You loved it as in that should have been a show, a full feature or full length series.
Yes.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about it more.
So Sam, midichlorians, not topical at the moment, but just the conversations that come up in our thread.
Always topical, Mike.
Because they're always with us. Is that what you're trying to say, Sam?
I'm just saying, you go down, you pop in the bodega, you're getting yourself, ham, egg, and cheese on on an English muffin. You want salt, pepper, ketchup, obviously, and you're talking to the guy, and it's like, what are you going to talk about? Well, you're probably going to, bring up, what happened to the game on Sunday, then maybe some midichlorian talk, then what you got on your desk today. It's so pretty, standard New York conversation.
What you're trying to say is that if Clerks was made after the prequels, it would have been a scene about the midichlorians and not about stormtroopers on the Death Star.
Ooh. I mean, yeah, maybe. That's pretty good.
The reason that I wanted to bring up the conversation is in our text thread, we've gone back and forth and talked a little bit about it. And you and I seem to be maybe on opposite ends more so than Chris and Ryan. And I say it is that I have become much more enamored with the prequels after starting this podcast. There's so much more I like about them than when I watched them initially, when I probably joined what was this prevailing opinion of the fan base that was too prevalent, that things were just bad, when really if you took the time, you realize they're not quite as bad as everybody seemed to perceive that they were. I cannot, though, get on board with midichlorians. And I will say it, and just as the opening salvo, the reason why, and this is something that I find very interesting just with all of us, is how we watch Star Wars and how we perceive it the first time around. The first time I watched Star Wars at 8 years old, I heard about the Force and thought about it as something that if you just took the time, if you were able to connect with that part of yourself, you could access the Force no matter what lineage you had, and which is why, The Last Jedi really resonated with me. But because of what Yoda had been saying, what Obi-Wan had been saying, the forces around us, it binds us, it's an energy field. It just felt like something that, oh, we all have it. It's just I haven't made the monk-like dedication to master my access to the Force. So that's why I can't use it. And that's why when you're 10 and you're trying to move the remote across the room with your mind, you think, yeah, it's possible. I could do this. It's all out there. So when the midichlorians were introduced, I saw it as reductive and taking the universe and making it smaller and almost, in a way, gatekeeping for only a certain type of people who are imbued with this power based on the number of midichlorians they had. And I think, Sam, you've brought up that, you can almost have it both ways with that. But I saw it as, oh, well, I probably don't have a high midichlorian count, so I guess I can't access the Force. And so that was a bit deflating as somebody who had always thought it was open for everybody.
Well, first of all, Mike, I want to say, believe in yourself, man. You got it. You can, Mike.
I can do it, though, if I don't need midichlorians. I can just do it on my own. That's the thing.
You're good, man. You're good. My journey on this was a little bit different, which was that I didn't really clock the midichlorian thing. Whenever I saw Phantom Menace in theaters, it was just another piece of lore. It was just another piece of history. It was more, to be honest, there's a term, I think, oh man, was it Star Wars? I think it was a Star Trek term, actually, sorry, but, it's space babble or something that they, or there's a term for all the jargon, all the, sort of technical, canon-y stuff that the writers have to do, and some writers specialize in that, right? And this would be where maybe you'd have a story group step in and write this, right? So to me, it read like that, right? Maybe it's called Trek Babble. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But this idea of they introduced midichlorians, it's something we hadn't heard of before. I certainly had never heard of them at the time I saw Phantom Menace. But I didn't pause. It didn't change anything for me then and there. Right.
Yeah.
But, and I loved that movie when I saw it. I was the right age. I was a kid. Star Wars is for kids. It was awesome. Over the years, I think I definitely had the sort of typical approach of like, well, I really did come to appreciate the original series more than the prequel. Something felt off about them. Something didn't work for me. I liked them less. I would say for me now, like what I think I know now about that is like, for me, it's dialogue and it's kind of some of the performance stuff, which mm-hmm. is the stuff that Lucas is kind of admittedly like not great at, right?
Yeah.
And he's not the best director of actors and he's not the best writer of dialogue. But if you remove that stuff, the prequels are super awesome and I've now come out the other side of appreciating them more. But in that middle ground, whenever I had some of my like difficulties loving the prequels, something that happened is like when you don't respond to something as well, it becomes easy for like, I was influenced into hating midichlorians, I think.
I can see that, because like, I think if, I was influenced as well, with, not necessarily by midichlorians, but into hating the prequels.
So let me say, like, I think there was this acknowledgement internally where I was like, this doesn't feel like the original series. To put it bluntly, I don't think I like this as much as the original series. These prequels, I don't like them as much. Why? I don't know. Same guy did it. It's awesome stories. It's stuff about Jedi. Why don't I like this as much? And it seems like that is what the internet wanted to talk about, right? And that's what a lot of comedians and Star Wars fans and people. And so there was a ton of you know, shared thinking and public like sort of explanation from thought leaders, I guess, in the space, like nerd culture thought leaders, saying like, well, here's what you didn't like about it. You didn't like that they over-explained the Jedi. You didn't like seeing Vader as a kid and giving a whole backstory to him. And you didn't like that they explained away the Force and it made it midichlorians and made it a special thing. And I heard that and I go, yeah, that all sounds wrong. That all sounds antithetical to the original series. That must be it. And I bought into it. The reason this conversation came up, as you said on our text thread recently, was obviously after the, for me, unfathomable disappointment that was The Rise of Skywalker.
Right there with
you. Complete garbage movie. I wanted to watch something I really liked. And so I naturally went to Phantom Menace, had to hang out with my boy Liam. And when we got to the scene about midichlorians, I don't know what, I was in a more open head space. I was enjoying the movie a lot. And well, I was like, I don't hate midichlorians at all. It makes sense.
In fairness, I have a new read on them. When you compare that to The Rise of Skywalker, of course it seems wonderful and amazing because The Rise of Skywalker had no ideas. It had nothing to say. It had nothing to contribute.
Well,
yeah, it looks great.
Well, okay, so I also watched The Last Jedi 4 times since The Rise of Skywalker came out, and I'm telling you, midichlorians are awesome and Phantom Menace is awesome. Like, I'll put The Phantom Menace next to The Last Jedi, and but I won't say they're equal, but I like them both.
But Sam, so I get what you're saying, that like obviously there is a groupthink, there is this big conversation point of why the midichlorians can undercut what original Star Wars was. But what in this new...
But here's why I think they don't.
Tell us what has changed when you witness that. Because I think
just
because it's a large group of people doesn't mean that it's off base.
Okay, so the idea of midichlorians somehow subtracting from the specialness of the Force or somehow being antithetical, it assumes that what Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan and Yoda are talking about when they talk about midichlorians are that the midichlorians grant the Force, that they, you know, these living beings inside that we have a symbiotic relationship with, that they are the source of the Force within Force users.
That's what I thought they were laying out. If you're born
with, or you somehow acquire a high midichlorian count, you therefore now have the ability to leverage the Force. This is what you're describing, and this is what a lot of people are critical of.
Sam, you've solved it. This is what's the story of the Mandalorian. They're trying to steal the midichlorians from Baby Yoda. You solved
it. I think they could be trying to extract something like that, but it will be a wasted effort, and here's why. Because I think there's a reading of the Phantom Menace, like of midichlorians in the Phantom Menace, that it's not that they are the source of this power, but rather that they are the indicators that we have. They are the white blood cells that indicate, you know, to doctors when you have an infection. These are the metrics that we can identify, and we know that in Force users, we see, oh man, midichlorians are really maybe drawn to these people, or people who are really strong in the Force build up a lot of midichlorians. And so it's the way we can measure it. It's a metric. And if you look at it that way, and not like, if you look at it as like a correlation, not a causation, I think then it doesn't conflict with the idea that anybody could have it. Because in my reading, I'd say, you know, you, Mike, could practice and go all monk-like and study and try really hard and begin to master the Force. And as a result, your midichlorian count would go up. That's how I'm reading it. And I think with this reading, it like doesn't break the franchise. And I think that people like fixated on the wrong element and took it at like the first reading, which is like, oh, lots of midichlorians, high Force means midichlorians give you the Force. And like, I don't think that's what Lucas was saying, like at all.
Yeah, I think the reason that I still am stuck where I am is that because he was born with it. You know, he was born with the midichlorian count as high as he was.
We don't know that.
But we haven't seen anything in, well, other than him that's being not, kind in young Anakin that is like...
He's the only human who can pod race. He has faster reflexes than anybody in the world.
No, I know, but none of that all seems to be intrinsic. That all seems to be what he was born with. At least that's the takeaway I have from watching it, is that it's more about the midichlorians. He was born from the midichlorians. They even say that. It's almost an immaculate conception that he's born from the midichlorians, so he's ripe with all these midichlorians, which means that he's great at all these things because he was imbued with all of this, rather than him having to earn it and learn it and become a master of the Force.
But like, there are people who I think if you look at it like other abilities, like other measures of like intellect or athleticism or something, there are people who seem like they're born with an innate ability, but it's like,
well,
that
yes.
doesn't mean that they're gonna, you know, play in the NBA, right? Like, there's.
But I think you could make that qualification for somebody who's in their 20s when he's, what is he, 8? I feel like, you know, there hasn't been a time for him to really dedicate himself to his craft at that point.
I think you're presenting like a valid case, like sort of against my reading. Like he is sort of too young to have like mastered the Force and therefore like built up midichlorians. But it's like, so even if he was born of the Force itself, or if he was born with Force powers,
he shouldn't have more midichlorian count than Master Yoda. Which is what the dialogue had.
I don't know that oh right, yeah. Even Master Yoda's is it.
That was a really good Ewan.
But I'm trying to like think through it, because I still think my reading works, right? Which is that you know, Anakin, you know, conceived by the Force to represent balance, or to like bring balance because things were so out of whack, would by virtue of being someone strong in the Force, would develop, again, I'm just like, it would develop a lot of midichlorians.
I mean, whether or not
he's lifting rocks and stuff, yeah. Like, he, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is like, it doesn't affect for me the idea that like, the idea that someone who is not a Force user or not, you know, seemingly Force sensitive can learn the Force.
Yep. Yeah, I think,
like the movies themselves, even like, you know, more subtly kind of deal in that whenever you look at people like Chirrut Imwe or something, who it's like, you know, what's his deal? Is he actually tapping into the Force? Is he not? Is he just a believer, an acolyte?
Well, like, he's being a guardian of the wills and a protector of the wills. It seems like he had that monk-like dedication.
Yeah, but like, But he's not. But he's not a Jedi.
No.
Why not?
Well, because he. Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think you could say.
You know what I mean? Like he dedicated himself. So it's like there's other places in the movie that seem to say like
actually though, some if
people
you think about it,
some people are able to do this and some aren't. But I don't know the whole idea of like. The whole, I guess what I'm getting at, sorry, just like in terms of like the specific criticism of like, oh, midichlorians were a bad idea and they like ruined, quote unquote, ruined the Force, or like, were a bad direction to take that, or they explained away the Force in a bad way. I'm like, I don't think they did. I guess is like I'm defending them as a choice because I think they're interesting and I don't actually think people have read that correctly.
And I think I've pretty much in the same place I was already. I can respect where you're coming from, Sam, because I think I can understand the reading. I just like it's still not a reading that I can have.
Sure.
And so I don't think that makes either one of us right or wrong. It's obviously everybody has their own different interpretation when you watch a film. But I for me, I still just think of the magic of believing that anybody could have it without any other caveats. And I know. It doesn't feel that way from when you're watching the film, which is fine. That's just where I end up with it. But going back to the Chirrut comment, I think the only reason that he is not a Jedi is because he chose to be a protector of the wills and doesn't have a lightsaber. Everything that he can do is Jedi-esque. You know, he can do basically all the stuff that a powerful Force user can do. He's just not in the Jedi Order.
Well, we never see him move anything, right?
Oh, no, doesn't he move a switch from across... And doesn't he shoots down one of the TIE fighters with his blaster bow?
He does shoot down. He does like a no-look shot, which, I mean, no-look is, I guess, the character's blind. So
yeah,
I guess he's kind of like every shot's a no-look shot.
Oh, boy.
But I think that's fair. I don't think that was, I didn't say that like as a put down.
No, I know. I didn't think you did.
he does do that, which is. But, like, I'm talking about, he doesn't move a switch, does he? I guess so.
You know what? No, he has to walk all the way to the switch. But
right.
He uses the Force to, you speak about the Force is with me, to have the blasters not hit him.
I don't know. We also know that, like, stormtroopers can't hit the broadside of a barn.
So what you're saying is that dramatic moment of the Force, I'm one with the Force is with me, it didn't matter that he was doing that, the stormtroopers just couldn't hit him.
Well, I'm saying that it's like, if we take it out of the context of Star Wars, you know, if we put it in, if we make this a World War II movie and we see a soldier walk across, you know, a sort of like field of fire, say, you know, where there's a crossfire, saying, you know, using a you know, whatever is God, you know, Christian God or something, you know,
well,
you know,
exactly.
I'm with the Lord's with me or whatever, and he doesn't get hit by bullets. Like, are we saying like, oh man, he actually is an apostle or whatever that would be? You read it as like, okay, somehow his faith, like there, the movie in that case would be saying like, maybe his faith is protecting him. Maybe he's incredibly lucky, but whatever it is, it's this hopeful catharsis of like a miracle of survival. Right. And like, that's what they're doing in Rogue One. I think they're intentionally not showing you if the Force truly is like, they don't have any of the like laser blasts or blaster bolts. They don't have any of the blaster bolts like curve around him, right?
No,
they're not saying like he's actually protected by the Force. It's left to interpretation. So is he actually tapping into it? Maybe. But like, this is a guy who's dedicated his whole life to this, and the best he can do after a lifetime of dedication to the wills and to the Force is to like muster enough that like the aim is off enough for him to get to a switch. But like he can't pull a Kylo Ren and stop a blaster bolt midair. He can't, you know.
Look, let's be honest.
You know what I mean?
Let's be honest though, is like even people who do dedicate a lifetime to something don't end up becoming a master of it.
What I'm saying is I need to know his midichlorian count for this conversation to have any, like, you know,
you know what?
I can't...
When they do the augmented reality of Star Wars and you can see every character, it'll pop up with midichlorian count for per character.
Oh, little like nuclear blast looking like graphic.
which by the way, so wait, do we know, is the midichlorian count then incredibly high in Sith Lords? Because I guess it is. If Anakin had a high midichlorian count, does it become a negative midichlorian count because he's got evil midichlorians in? I don't, you know, I'm just spitballing there. But going back to one thing that you had just said, obviously there is that kind of Christianity moment in Rogue One, and the faith in God can keep you safe. And it reminds me of Saving Private Ryan, where they have the scene with the priest who's going from dying soldier to dying soldier and somehow missing all of the explosions that are coming for him. And they're just like, oh, you see that? How did that happen? But one of the other reasons why I sort of rejected the midichlorians is that idea of this immaculate conception, because that plus the chosen one plus the scene where Shmi's like, there was no father, is like, oh, do we really need another Christianity Jesus parable? Like, can we have Star Wars be its own thing? I don't want it to be connected to religion.
I kind of don't either. But when you look at, I mean, it fits with what Lucas was doing. I mean, Lucas was playing with the idea of the monomyth, and what he did with the original trilogy was he gave us, you know, a hero's journey where, you know, a small boy, took on gods and became powerful and became, you know, a hero of myth himself, right? And so, but when you're diving in further, it's like, if you look at the stories that Lucas was fascinated by and the stories that have been told across, across cultures for generations and generations, it's like,
but yeah, none of us are worshiping at the Church of Zeus.
Zeus came and, well, it, but so what? Like, the reason it resonates is because he's literally lifting from,
oh yeah,
he's basically, it's like the idea of like you steal from the best, right? He's like stealing from the most the most popular, most retold stories of all time, which when you look at it, it's like, what's been the most captivating story of all time? It's like all the like religions of the world, right? Because yeah, like, you know, you have people extremely faithful to them and dedicated. So this is like a morality tale that's structured like a religious fable or myth, you know, and that like, so the whole, you know, I think it could have been interesting if we saw, you know, Anakin have a more directly like related to Luke's story, you know, if Anakin didn't, like if he came from nowhere, but not like literally nowhere, you know, like, I don't know, maybe, but...
Look, the only religion I want in my Star Wars is the religion of the Jedi, and that's, I guess, I understand what you're saying, because pulling from what is one of the most well-received stories that has changed so many people's lives is worth doing, but...
Best-selling book of all time.
Yeah, you know, I have a little book for you I want you to read. It's called...
The Journal of the Wills.
But it's just, I think at that time and even still now, I'm like, you know, I've heard about this enough. I don't need that again. Immaculate Conception. Do we really need to have a sermon at some church about how Star Wars is where you can find the story of Jesus told again? I mean, I don't want that.
Oh my gosh. I fortunately have not encountered that.
Well, I haven't encountered it either, but the fact that it exists out there is what gives me a...
They used to do that with movies. Actually, I think I feel like it was with the original. I feel like it was with, oh man, was it as recent as Man of Steel or was it the original Superman? There was at some point their marketing departments actually, like, this is a thing that like Hollywood marketing departments would reach out to like local churches and church organizations and suggest like homilies and parables of like how you could how the story of Superman like related to like Moses and Jesus and like could be tied in, and it was like an active like actual marketing campaign to get like pastors and priests and people like men of the cloth to actually like preach about and market the movie. And it was like, I read about it. It was like, it was a working campaign. Isn't that crazy?
Genius. You know, it clearly influenced tons of people. And now you've got a lot of people who have Superman at the top of their altars in their homes.
Oh, man. Now I'm picturing that photo of Ewan McGregor. That meme. That meme of whatever,
exactly,
you know, grandma
Jesus
has. Yeah.
Well.
No, I mean, look. I mean, this is a... I mean, this I feel like is a topic for a full episode of like, if we ever, I mean, if we weren't too scared, I don't know if we actually want to ever get into like, you know, Star Wars as a religious text and like Star Wars as it relates to like, all religion and where, you know, its source, or if we want to get into the idea of like, well, what exactly is the Jedi Order? You know, they're an order of knights. They're also a religious order. They're also like kind of vaguely like just spiritualist, like nature lovers, you know, like like where do they fall? They're kind of, and they're also samurai, you know. Like,
no, we've kind of only scratched the surface. Clearly there are several and many other religious allusions in Star Wars in terms of actual religions throughout our real world, not just ones that are created within the world of Star Wars.
What I'm glad is that we can now, we can all agree, you and me, all of our listeners, everybody agrees that the midichlorians were a good idea. They were good for Star Wars. They strengthened the story.
You know, Sam, if you can,
because
find
you just
me...
have to look at them as a metric for how, for an indicator, a leading indicator of someone's facility with the Force.
We've got three things that we have to go and do after this podcast. Number one, Galaxy Far, Far Away is female. Number two, iPork TLJ shirt. And number three, a BuzzFeed-style quiz that tells you your midichlorian count.
Ooh, that's fun.
And I'm like,
that's fun.
Now that you've convinced me, which it hasn't, I'll get that midichlorian count tattooed right on my forehead.
You're going to go you're gonna go post-midichlorian style?
Yeah, what? Post-midichlorian, post-Malone,
post-midichlorian joke.
I get where you're going. Actually, I don't know if our digits in Arabesh, are they different than digits in our typical text? Like, what is an Arabesh digit? So if I have my midichlorian count tattooed in Arabesh, you know, because if I just had on my forehead 127, it'd be like, what is this guy doing? Why is that? But if it's an Arabesh, then it's like, clearly, this was a Star Wars thing.
Mm. Well, I'm going to say, like, look, I know we all have our Mickey Mouse tattoos, Mickey Mouse Mando tattoos, and I think that was definitely a good idea. I would say, like, before you get a forehead tattoo, Mike, like, think it over, you know? Like, wait to see how Chris's comes out, and then, you know, see if you feel like you want to do that, because that's a big choice, you know? Face tattoos are...
I mean, you've made it clear that midichlorians are my new religion, so why wouldn't I do that? Well, send us your thoughts. droidspot@gmail.com. Tweet us. Let us know what you think of the midichlorians. Has your opinion of them changed over the years? Did you have an initial reaction? And Sam, I still stand by. I think what first drew it to my attention was that wide reaction. But the more that I've thought about it is more of that personal reaction of what I thought the Force was when I was a kid. And so that's sort of why, despite it being this widely held opinion, you know, I take it more to this personal level of what is off-putting for me. But let us know your thoughts on the midichlorians. Send us droidspod@gmail.com, Twitter droidspod, Facebook droidspodcast, Instagram droidspod. We want to know, where would you get your midichlorians tattoo? Would it be on your face?
I just want to know, like, where do you come down on midichlorians? Like,
yeah.
I'm selfishly, like, personally curious, like, does this kind of new reading that I have, does it hold water? Does it make sense to you? Does it change anything for you if you've heard it? Or are you like, no, Sam, like, that's good for you, that's nice headcanon, but you're crazy, it doesn't work.
Well,
you know,
see,
like,
I tip my cat to you and I say that's good headcanon, but you know what? I have my own headcanon. I you have to respect that everybody has their own different interpretations. And I don't know, you know, it's to say that, oh, I don't want to say that making an argument can't change someone's mind, but I feel like in this instance, it's like, especially with fiction, we're all going to interpret things our own way.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is like, I just like, who's right? Just like tweet at us, like,
let's take a poll though. I want a poll. Actually, you know what? We'll do a Twitter poll.
Tweet like team Mike, team Sam, or team Edward. Like, who's going to be the new Batman? Oh, got it in. Whew. Okay.
Oh, I'm glad you did, Sam. Well, on that note, yes, please do let us know your thoughts on the midichlorians. We would love to hear from you. We'll take a straw poll, and then we'll use that. We'll also get Ryan and Chris's thoughts on the next edition of the pod. This has been the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Join us next time where we're going to dive even deeper on religion in Star Wars. Well, maybe not right away. We'll do it one day. This has been the Droids You're Looking For, a
Chris
Star
is
Wars
sweating
podcast.
Bullets right now as soon as he hears this.
What they
Boring conversation. Anyway, you boys want to go to Galactic Space Cruiser? Wait, I forgot to mention that, didn't I? Oh, well.